Welcome to Growth Marketing Today, where marketers, designers, and product owners level up their growth marketing chops from experts in today's top startups. Here's your host, Ramley John.
Welcome to episode 80 of Growth Marketing Today. I'm your host, Ramley John, and this is the last episode of January 2020. Can you believe it? We're already 1 month through 12 months of this year. How's your month going so far? Hope you're killing it and doing some amazing, epic things. So if you don't know who I am your host, Ramley John, and I just want to share with you my mission. It's to help marketers and founders like you sharpen their marketing skills by talking to some of today's top experts. Today I have Sarah. She is the director of demand generation at Wave. Now, how can demand gen and growth teams work together? Some people think that demand gen's roles is to just bring more signups and while growth takes it from there. In this episode, Sarah actually shares how demand gen and growth teams work hand in hand to bring qualified leads at Wave Financial. They just got acquired by H&R Block. So this is an interesting post-acquisition look at how growth and demand gen teams work together. In episode 80, you'll learn first how demand gen and growth teams work together at Wave. Second, what is demand generation? It's such a topic that people have different opinions on. And I picked Sarah's brain. She's been in demand gen for the last 5 to 10 years. And third, how to identify channels to acquire more signups and scale them. Before we jump in, I just want to thank those who made this episode possible. These folks helped cover the cost of hosting and marketing tools so I can focus on getting amazing experts that you and I can learn from. Thank you for the sponsor for this episode, Referral Rock. It's a SaaS that helps businesses like yours unlock all the referrals you are missing out on. So stop waiting for word of mouth to just happen while letting those precious referral opportunities go to waste. Find out more at referralrock.com/grow today, or you can find that link in the description to start a free trial or get a consultative demo. Stay tuned to hear more about Referral Rock later in the episode and the special offer they are giving you today. And if you're interested in getting an ad-free version of this podcast, you can go to patreon.com/grow today to become part of my Patreon supporters. You get each episode at least one day before anybody else. You also get access to a private Slack group and also have video AMA calls with me if you'd like. Go to patreon.com/grow today or find that link in the description to support the show. Well, enough about this. Let's jump in my chat with Sarah. Hey, everybody. I'm excited to finally chat with Sarah. She is the director of demand gen at Wave. I've been chatting with her way back then before Wave got acquired. And, you know, we were teaching together at Red Academy.
Yeah, I know a lot has happened this year. So I'm really happy that we could manage to chat.
Well, I'm excited to chat about the stuff you're working on, because I'm also going to interview your director of growth, Vivek. But you know how demand gen and growth go work together at a company that just got acquired and is growing. But before we do that, I'd love to hear about your journey, because I love asking this question, because I think maybe people early on in their career, especially me, I thought career it's a linear progression. It's like, oh, you're a specialist, then you're a manager, then you're demand gen, and then now you're CEO. But, you know, what's your journey been like, and how did you become director of demand gen at Wave?
So I was fortunate in the sense that, like, what I took at school, I went to the University of Western Ontario. I took media information and technoculture. I loved my undergrad, not only like my education, but my experience. So I was very fortunate in that sense that I ended up in the place that was right for me. But, you know, my education had there's a big theory component. We did touch on advertising and marketing, but it wasn't a business undergrad by any means. So the way I supplemented that was with the jobs that I had every summer. And I was very fortunate to be a paid kind of coordinator at Warner Brothers Canada every summer. And then after that, so I got some hands on the ground, marketing, publicity, advertising experience very early on, and, you know, really made it my goal to make sure that in my time off of school, I was, I was focusing on meaningful work experiences. And, you know, I was fortunate I had a little bit of guidance on that as well, where it was really easy. And, you know, I was in a lot of student debt and all of that jazz. And so it would have been easier to just go take a server job and make the money and then not graduate with a bunch of student debt. that would have been easier to do it that way. But I recognized that there was a bit of balance that I had to have from a professional experience standpoint as well. And, you know, I took the risk in graduating with more debt versus trying to pay it off while I was in school. And so I recognized that. And obviously that's not a challenge for everyone, but it was for me. And so it was riding that balance. And so for anyone early on, you know, I get that that can be a challenge, you know, especially if you don't have a lot of help, and that's okay. And there's ways to make that work, and it will work itself out if you exercise a bit of discipline. So there was that. And so when I graduated, I was at a crossroads where I was really interested in teaching. And fast forward, I now currently teach at Brain Station, which I'm so happy to be teaching at, because it does give me the opportunity to kind of flex a muscle that I enjoy using. And so I actually got into teacher's college at OISE, which is at the University of Toronto. And I also got an advertising job at Zenith Optimedia, which is a part of Publicis. And so it wasn't a very high paying job, very much like the overworked and underpaid kind of situation. I kind of had some challenges in certain regards there as well, around, you know, the culture of an agency and things of that nature. It was really hard, especially like fresh out of school, but it did give me a lot of experience in a short period of time, especially when it came to media buying. So that was the role I was in. And it also taught me, you know, that I wanted to look for something client side. And I started to understand that that world even existed, right? The difference between agency side and client side. It's not clear. If you're not in an advertising program when you're in school, then you don't really know that that exists, or that's less easily understood. And so, you know, the agency experience was super valuable, was very helpful in developing my work ethic as well. But I really wanted to focus on one brand versus 5 or 10 and zero in on that. So shortly after, I went to go work at Sears Canada, which, you know, obviously has ceased business operations in this country since. But I have to say, like, it is one of the most transformative work experiences I've ever had. And so while the business had a lot of challenges, I was on the e-commerce team, which was such a privilege. I worked with some great humans who are now at other retailers, leading e-commerce teams at other retailers and working in different capacities. And so we make a joke around calling it the University of Sears, that you came through e-commerce, you went through Sears at some point in your career. And I feel super privileged that I got to do that. I worked with some phenomenal people. And also the benefit, I'm going to say, of being in a situation, you know, where I was surviving rounds of layoffs and e-commerce was a profitable part of the business, so we weren't at tremendous risk, was that whenever people left the business because there was a constant hiring freeze, it meant that someone had to put their hand up to do that job. And because of that, I saw that as an opportunity to get practice and get experience in other domains of digital marketing and within our e-commerce function that I probably wouldn't have gotten to have otherwise. So, you know, I remember our social media manager, community manager left just before peak season, before the holidays. And so there was no one to do that job. And so I put my hand up and was like, I'll do it. And so, you know, it was a bit of a sacrifice in terms of my time and my personal time, but it was very real experience that would have been hard to come by otherwise without moving into a specific role of that nature. And so I was very happy to put my hand up and take that on. And it was a really fruitful experience, I have to say, like, you know, in terms of who I worked with, what I worked on, and it was fantastic. And then, you know, I've kind of gone on to other retailers after that, you know, briefly worked at Walmart e-commerce with some fellow Sears colleagues as well. And you know, worked at Indigo and Loblaw Digital, which was also a big experience for me. They have a great team at Loblaw Digital. And so I'm super appreciative of the opportunities that I had while I was there, and, you know, working on different businesses like Joe Fresh and launching Beauty Boutique and launching Click and Collect, which is now PC Express, and going from one store to three to, I'm sure they're over 300, if not more now, was very transformative as well, to be kind of in the right place at the right time. And then moving on to more typical startup experience, working at Chef's Plate and helping launch a business, helping launch Couple, and now finding my way to Wave. And so it's my first real main departure from the traditional retailer experience that I've had in e-commerce, as well as, you know, direct-to-consumer brands. So it is a bit different in that sense, but it's been very rewarding thus far in terms of, you know, getting deep into fintech and, you know, having been here for this acquisition by H&R Block, it's been very cool. And so I'm coming up on a year and there's so much that has happened and so much that I've learned and so much that we've done here. I'm very fortunate to be surrounded by a lot of great people here. So I don't pretend that it's ever a single person's job. It's really like the sum of all parts.
That's such a great thread that goes through, right, and carries through to where you're at right now. What made you make the switch from more B2C retailer e-commerce side to, you know, Wave is probably targeting more small, medium businesses.
Yeah.
What was that trigger point? Like, oh, I'm going to switch my niche.
Yeah. So like I was at a crossroads, right? I had a couple of opportunities to on the retail side and e-commerce and direct to consumer brands. And the Wave opportunity presented itself as well. And I don't know if this is obvious based on what I've said so far, but people really, really matter in whatever job you do. It isn't about the company you work for. You can work for the most desirable brand, but if you don't work with good people, it's not fun and it's not enjoyable and it's harder to do good work. And so not to say that that was the experience in retail, but you know, when I was at my crossroads, I was deciding what I was going to do next. I had a few options, and with Wave, you know, I had met several members of the team, and I was just so impressed by the questions I received, by the people that I met, you know, who I knew was going to be my future leadership. And it was a decision that I almost wish that I had made faster and sooner. And I appreciate it. And then so in combination with that is that knowing that it would be a bit of a different challenge, learning a different type of business, getting into a different niche, I thought it was a good way to also diversify my experience because I have spent so much time in retail. And I love retail, my first love, and selling things online. Like, you know, I feel very equipped to do that. And we still do that. Like, you know, at Wave, we're selling something different. That's essentially what business does. It's just selling something different, though, with different customer needs and so on. And I felt very compelled by the business, the mission, and really the people. And then I ended up here.
That's so good. That's so true that, you know, you can work like at the best place. And you know, I worked at a company that's going like, oh, we're going 1,000% every year. I was like, oh, that's cool. That must be a great company. And then the people suck. You know, they like destroy each other, but it's not going to be a great work experience for you. I want to talk a little bit about demand gen and what that means for you and what that means particularly for Wave. Because, you know, what, and, you know, compared to Wave, what does demand gen look differently for another company that you've worked at?
Yeah, so I mean, there's a couple of things, right? Demand generation gets called different things at different places. I've been in a role where I was, you know, the director of acquisition, which functioned very similarly to what demand gen is here at Wave. I've been in demand gen function. So here at Wave specifically, it encompasses paid marketing, encompasses paid SEO, as well as content marketing. And so it's kind of this trifecta in one place, knowing that these three roles and these three disciplines are very interdependent on each other, especially for their success, right? Like one cannot really succeed without the other. And so that's really important to consider. And so that's what that looks like here at Wave. And we look at these things in totality. They're not done in silos. And so that's, I think, also a really important aspect of what makes us strong. Whereas like in other places, you know, demand gen tended to be more focused on the paid side. I've worked at really big organizations that invested very small amounts of money in SEO. And so that was never a role or a priority. And in some cases it's okay, because if you're a massive brand, you can probably get away with that. You're just going to spend more on paid and you're going to pay your way there versus some of the organic growth that you could be taking advantage of. And yeah, so that's what it looks like here at Wave.
Did you say success is part of demand gen? I find that interesting. Like, you mean customer success is part of demand gen?
Oh, so what I mean by success, I mean in terms of for SEO, paid, and content to be successful,
okay,
to drive meaningful business results, they are very dependent on each other, right? Like, if you don't have really great SEO, you're going to end up spending more in paid to make up for that. And if you have great content, but you don't have any means of people being able to see that, then it doesn't really matter if you have great content. What's the point? Like, you make a great blog article, but if no one reads it, then it's not really great, you know? And so that's a huge component of thinking about the distribution strategy when we spend time and energy building something, is who's actually going to see it? Who's going to see it? And are they going to care? And those are just really important considerations. And by having content, SEO, and paid in the same place, is that obviously they can help each other in doing this, right? SEO is integral to surfacing content, and paid can be a faster way to doing so, and vice versa. So it's just really important to think of them in totality versus separately.
That's a really good way to put it. So is that your main acquisition drivers right now would be paid SEO and content? Like, which one is like the bulk of your acquisition, even if you can maybe like talk vaguely about that?
Yeah, I mean, at a high level, Wave has been built on organic growth. This business has seen tremendous organic growth since day one. And so that stands to be a very large part of our acquisition and continues to be so.
And paid now is mixed in. Like, what kind of paid are you looking at? Paid social, paid search, or just paid everything?
Yeah, I mean, so we've done a lot of testing, but we've also it's been really important to nail channels before we, you know, get them in a really good place before we try to do a little bit of everything, but not really doing anything exceptionally well. And so we've taken the approach to keep a narrow focus to get things into a really good place before we go on to doing new things. Paid search obviously is a big part of our business, paid social, digital, just kind of any digital channel in Wave and kind of B2B land. Review sites are also really important. So paying attention there as well has been really important for us.
I want to talk about success. I had a chat, and it wasn't, you know, it was over coffee with Vivek, which is the director of growth there. What does success mean?
What a great human.
Yes.
Such a great human. What a great human.
Yeah. Not just smart, like incredibly smart, but he's incredibly humble, right? I think that's something that it's great to see in a person.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's a smart dude. We work very closely together, and that is a privilege for me.
I'm going to get him on the podcast for sure, and I'm going to let him know that you said...
Good luck with that. Good luck.
Why? What happened?
Oh, I can't wait. It took me a while to get on this. I would like to see how long it takes him.
Hopefully sooner. I'm really curious what success looks like for demand gen, and I've heard it kind of shifted over the past year. What, you know, what does a good successful acquisition look like?
Yeah, so, you know, obviously at a high level, you know, having people sign up for our business, but what's really more important than that is having our business, having those who sign up for Wave take meaningful actions and be able to use our different lines of business. So, you know, Wave is all encompassing. I think recently someone referred to us as a financial tech stack, which I very much appreciate that name. I'm into that. We're going to try to make that a thing. And, you know, around accounting, payroll, invoicing and payments, which is a big part of our business, and more products to come. But, you know, success is different for different areas, is one, being aligned on what that looks like. And then the other piece is making sure that people are taking meaningful actions beyond sign up. Like, what are they doing? What is the real meaningful down funnel business impact that they're having? And measuring that versus kind of the surface level vanity metric of signups, which is important because that's a metric that diagnoses a greater KPI. So it is something we have to pay attention to. If that suddenly dropped in half, we would have a problem. So it isn't something we ignore, but we know that there's more to consider than just that.
No, that's so true, because I think the misconception is that, you know, just bring people out the door and, you know, your job is done. But
yeah,
you're kind of approaching it from an integrated approach where, like, you're actually seeing it flow through. Right.
Oh, yeah. Like, if it's different, because obviously on the retail side, it's like just sell stuff. And so it's one and done. it's more simplistic in nature and a bit more tangible that way. Whereas with us, you know, this is software and there's a lot of things that people can do within our software, and we want to help them arrive at the right place at the right time for what they need to do to serve their needs. That's ultimately the goal. And it's really important that demand gen is beyond just bringing people in the door. We're bringing the right people in the door, and we're bringing the right people to do the right things at the right time. And so the integrated approach is really critical to our future success.
Did it always start off that way, or was that something that you saw transform over the last year you worked there?
Yeah, this has definitely been a work in progress, and it still will be. It will always be evolving. Just because it is the way it is today doesn't mean it is the same way tomorrow. So I would say change is a constant we're all very comfortable with, knowing that we have to kind of move with our business and we have to move with our customers' needs. And that's just a part of doing business, right? And so this has been an evolution over the last year. We've made a lot of gains in going in this direction. And, you know, there's measurement to do, there's testing to do, and that never really ends. It never really ends.
When we come back in just a moment, we'll hear how Sarah works closely with Vivek, the director of growth at Wave, and how they share their responsibilities and goals together. Before we do, I just want to thank the sponsor for this episode, Referral Rock. Everyone knows how powerful word of mouth can be for a business. So what's the problem? Largely, word of mouth is unpredictable. One week you can get a bunch of new customers through referrals, the next week it's crickets. For most businesses, it's like trying to catch lightning in a bottle. Referral Lock makes designing and running a referral program easy for any businesses, not just e-commerce. Their software can even integrate with the leading CRMs like Salesforce and HubSpot, feeding referrals to your sales team. Now, let's be real. Not all businesses are run with a website checkout page. In fact, you can run a referral program with no website and zero integration. How is that possible? A marketer can run a proof of concept with zero help needed from any other teams. How's that for a quick growth experiment? Don't worry, you don't have to be a seasoned marketer to use Referral Rock. Every account comes with a dedicated customer success manager that can help you put all the best practices in place that fits your business. Find out more at referralrock.com/growth today to start a free trial or get a consultative demo. You can find that link in the description of the show as well. Referral Rock is kind enough to offer a $500 credit to a Growth Marketer Today subscriber. So all you have to do is sign up for the Growth Today email list and you'll be entered in that drawing, and I'll pick the winner at the end of February 2020. If you don't like ads like this, you can also sponsor me on Patreon for as little as $2 per episode. Not only will you get an ad-free version of this podcast, you get it a day before everybody else. And also, you'll be part of a private Slack group where I'm there. You can ask me any questions or just say hi. Or you can also do a monthly video call with me. So you can check that out at patreon.com/growthtoday or find that link in the description or at the website. Enough about this. Let's jump back into my chat with Sarah. I'm curious about your relationship with growth, because I think sometimes I also see other companies where demand gen is just doing their thing and then growth is doing their thing, and then they really talk to each other. But your relationship with Vivek, the director of growth, is not like that. You said you talk almost every day. Like, what's the relationship between demand gen and growth in at Wave?
So it's funny, because when I started, obviously growth can mean different things in different businesses. And so I asked what the growth team does before I started, because the growth team was in existence before I joined. And so, you know, I had been kind of told something along the lines of, like, my expectation is that you guys are best friends. And I know what that meant, and I know how that translates. And it's, we're only going to be as successful as each other. And there is so much to gain by working closely with each other versus working in isolation, where we just can't reap the full benefits of what each other does. And so it's just important that we look at, you know, what each other is doing, where the baton passes happen, and to leverage whatever learnings that each other has. And so this goes far beyond, like, my relationship with Vivek as the director of growth, but as the team's relationship, to understand and take the time to understand what each other is doing, what learnings there are, and where there may be some some work to do to unpack more so that we can strike gold. You know, that's kind of the end game, right? Is let's figure out like what we can do that can really help us kind of take things to the next level that we're only going to know through testing and learning and working closely with each other. Where in isolation, it's just, it would take a lot longer or may not even happen at all.
I want to get down to like how the relationship looks like. Does he come up to you and be like, hey, you know, that bunch of signups you brought in sucks, or you know, how does that conversation like happen?
No, it's not quite as blunt as that. But there's a lot of data analysis that goes on both sides. So it isn't just like we relegate data analysis to being a growth, something that the growth team has to take on. There are shared accountabilities that, you know, we both look at. I think it's discussion, you know, it's also spending time to build a level of trust where we can have frank discussions with each other as a team. As individuals as well, to share back those learnings, to participate in each other's meetings, to read through each other's material. Like the teams spend a lot of time documenting what we do. And it's our responsibility as individuals to take the time to read those things. Like they exist, they're there. They're there for a purpose. You know, we have to take the opportunity and make the time to make sure that we stay up on what's going on. And then also, yeah, like it's just casual conversation. Just being able to talk to each other, not having to set a meeting to say, you know, your signups last week sucked. Like, oh man, that'd be terrible if that's what we had to do. It's so much more than that. And so I think we're also lucky to be in a place where we can have conversations and much more open lines of communication, Slack, in person. I am of a persuasion that if you can talk to each other in person versus a 10-minute Slack conversation, that you should probably just go talk to each other. And also proximity, you know, we're not far from each other.
That's great that, you know, one thing that you mentioned is that you share learning with each other and documentation. What does that look like? Because I think that's a big part of like sharing what you've learned with the rest of the organization, is if it stays in your mind, it's going to stay there, versus if you document it. Now anybody can read it. Like what is your documentation? Do you put it in Google Drive? Do you have docs or Notion?
Yeah. I mean, there's a few things, you know, Google Docs, Confluence, those are important to us for documentation. You know, occasionally putting together larger decks and presentations. I try to keep the team lighter on the decks, obviously, because spending more time justifying what you're doing than actually doing it, to me, is a bit of a problem. So I do try to do what I can to keep the team enabled to do what they need to do, versus spending too much time having to showcase what they do. But obviously we find a balance in that, because it's very important that we share back what we learn and what we know. So it lives in a few ways and manifests in a few ways. And we try to do it, you know, we try to streamline it. We try to do it without creating too much work, and just making sure that, you know, we're giving everyone the information, you know, that we have. And especially on the paid side, we can learn things really quickly. And so it's important to us to make sure that we build out a proper feedback loop, which sometimes, you know, like, can fall to the wayside. It's easy to not make time for that. And we are equally as guilty of that. But, you know, it is a concerted effort across all teams.
That's so true. I mean, a big part of that is having the right kind of attribution system in place. So like, you know, if they came from Facebook, then they're not going to stick around, because, you know, we know that. How are you, you know, what kind of system do you have in place to make sure that you're attributing it to the right kind of campaigns or channels?
Yeah, I mean, attribution is a fun thing. It's challenging. It's been challenging no matter where I work. It is, you know, obviously we have business intelligence tools, Google Analytics, and a few other things of the sort, is just making sure that we're piecing things together and keeping that in mind for where attribution might fall short. But we look at a few different sources in order to make certain assessments. And also, we know, I think sometimes we can get really hung up on data, on what it does and does not show us. We know that someone doesn't wake up one day, if they've never heard about something, they don't wake up one day and automatically land on branded search, right? Like, that isn't, if there's no other mechanism for someone to have heard about something, it has to come from another channel. So we also look at proxies for effect, for where there are things that are less perfect to measure, to make sure that we understand that different things are going to have different impacts. And we have to be comfortable sometimes with the unknown or making educated guesses.
I mean, is that something you ask at the in the onboarding process? Like, where did you hear about Wave? Or is it more like you're just going to figure that out through other things?
Yeah, I mean, you know, there are certain pieces where you can see how people signed up that I don't think that's unique to our business, but no, it's not part of the onboarding flow at this point, though I may ask for it to be. but these things, you know, there are a few things that we can look at and it's not all a guess.
I want to shift gears and talk about figuring out whether you should pursue a new channel or you should optimize the channel. I think that's like the, you know, like the big decision a lot of people have to make. So should I stick with the channel I have right now, optimize it? Or, you know, at what point do you say, you know, this, I've optimized it to the point where it's good enough, I need to go find a new channel?
So I think it depends on a couple of things. So it depends on the level of investment and to what extent that channel that you already have has an impact on your business. So if you're spending the bulk of your budget on a particular channel and it is already reaping good results, is also, you know, you got to make a call around like the 80 for the 20, is that if you're constantly waiting for something to be perfect, you're never going to move on. And so that's a challenge in itself. And to not test things means missing out on things. And also a big piece that I do consider and can be hard to kind of grapple with is that a test may not succeed, but then you also have to ask yourself, was that test set up to succeed? And so I've been in environments, you know, way like not necessarily specific to Wave, where, you know, let's say paid social wasn't performing super well. And then you have to also ask the question, was it set up for success? Like, you know, go look at the campaigns, get in the nitty gritty. Like, was this ever really going to do well? Or did we just rush something for the sake of saying we were getting it done? And now we have mediocre results and, you know, we're not sure about this channel. So I think that's also really important to consider because executional excellence is so important to the success of digital channels that you also have to do your due diligence and set things up in a correct way to get better signals. So I think it's kind of riding that line. You know, at some point, you just have to be confident that you've done what you can in a channel and you're ready to go try a new one. I would say to not do that all at once, to do too many at once. It's like kind of go one at a time, nail it down, have it as a focus period. You know, like in February 2020, we're going to go all in on this and this is going to get a lot of our attention. Obviously, we're going to carve out some time to watch our other channels and, you know, to make sure that nothing gets set on fire and it's performing as it should be. So it's going to get a little bit less love, not none, but less. And then, you know, we're going to really go all in on X channel and we're going to put our best efforts to make this work. And then we're going to assess and then we'll see what we do and we'll move on. So it kind of falls into this cycle that I like using with the team is around, you know, you got to test and then you got to measure and scale. And so with the measurement and scaling is it worth scaling this? Are we seeing the right, is our measurement telling us, giving us the right kind of signal, even if it's not necessarily statistically significant? And then moving on from that and then starting it all over again and keep going, you know, like let's keep iterating and trying to make things better versus always waiting for something to be perfect before you put it into market.
And I want to ask a follow-up question to that on how you would scale a budget once you figure out a channel that actually works. Is do you like, you know, it's working really well, let's 2x our budget, or would you like be more, oh, let's increase it by 20% on, you know, a monthly basis?
Yeah, I'm a bit more cautious on that side, where I think doubling your budget depends on the size, right? So doubling a $1,000 budget isn't a big deal. Doubling a $500,000 budget is a big deal. You run into the risk of doubling something that size. You run into the risk of diminishing returns. And so I think depending at what size of budget you're at, you do have to think about whether or not it makes sense to do straight doubling or tripling versus scaling up by 10%, 20%, 30%, because you want to understand what your degradation is going to be as you scale up. So when you're in those higher numbers, I do think you have to do it in a more phased approach versus all at once, because then you don't know what your sweet spot is. Because let's say you're going from 200 to 400 to 600, you can then at least identify your sweet spots or where you're going to see points of diminishing return. Whereas if you go from 200 straight to 600 and 600 looks like crap, you're just going to reduce back down to 200. You don't really know. And so I think having a bit of a phased approach, and it doesn't mean that takes 3 months. That could take weeks. So just being a little bit patient, especially if you can, to do that and to do it well.
I want to start wrapping up in a bit and ask you, you know, what would be your advice to marketers? I know you've already given a lot of advice, but for that one piece of advice to marketers who might be a little early on in their career and they want to be director of demand gen one day.
Do they?
don't do it.
No, that's do it. Advice. I'm into it. No, I'm into it. I love it. I'm so lucky, and I really enjoy getting to work on, you know, these different areas. Paid is definitely where I have more of my professional experience, with SEO and content kind of adjacent to that. So I see a lot of opportunity in all of these realms, and I love how they come together. Like, that's what I just really think is beautiful, is how interdependent they are on each other and the opportunities that come from working closely together in those functions. In terms of advice, so one thing is that you really need to build that thirst for knowledge. A big thing, and so like I teach at BrainStation, which is, you know, awesome, and I get a mix of students, and so it's been fun to see what people are looking for. And at, you know, obviously I've taught people at different stages of their careers, or entrepreneurs and you know, owners of small businesses, as well as those who are like very early on in their career and know that this is, you know, a digital marketing skill set is critical to being a marketer, period. I think it's kind of going away in terms of referring to digital marketers and marketers as different things. Whereas if you're not a digital marketer, I think you're going to be very hard pressed to be a marketer. I think they're one and the same. And if they're not already, they're going to be. So that's an important consideration, is that they're very intertwined in order to do it well. But in terms of advice, I mean, yeah, like learning, like put your hand up, get, you know, ask questions, take classes. And you can take classes without spending a lot of money, as well as there's a lot of stuff online that's available. Taking the time, you know, practicing on your friends' businesses. I remember like the first paid search campaign that I launched was for a friend's business for no cost. And it was just like, I was kind of playing around and I used it as practice. And that was super important. And I was fortunate that I could also make the time to do that. So that's not necessarily feasible for everyone. But is reading, constantly learning. What we do today is not going to be the same as what we do in 5 years. My job has dramatically changed over the last decade. And so I think that's an important consideration, because while years of experience does help in a certain capacity, obviously it helps with maturity, it helps with solving business challenges, helps with emotional intelligence as well, it doesn't really help you in a digital skill set, because it changes so quickly. So especially if, let's say, you decide that paid search is your craft, what we were doing in paid search 5 years ago versus what we're doing today has evolved dramatically. And so making sure you stay up on that, making sure you're flexible to new ways of doing things is really, really important, and will help you grow and learn. And really, that's the key, is like the desire to learn, because we're never going to know everything. We're never going to be experts at every single function. At least I'm not. And I recognize that there's only so many hours in the day, that it's being open to different ways of doing things and taking the time for your personal growth and development. It's not entirely the responsibility of your manager. It is something that also has to be self-directed, because you're going to get some managers who are going to help you more and some that are going to help you less. And so it is a lot about taking initiative on your own learning and the desire to do that. And then the other piece I would say in addition to that is going to events and finding meetups to attend. And even if you're shy and, you know, the word networking, I think, can be a dirty word for some people, is it's okay. You don't necessarily have to go and talk to everyone. But if you start going regularly to these things, you start to see familiar faces, you might have a conversation here or there. So if it is a bit of a scarier endeavor to you, that's okay. You don't necessarily have to go and talk to everyone. That isn't necessarily the point. But you never really know what you're going to get by just listening. And so I think that's also important, especially earlier on in your career, is just to attend. You don't necessarily have to participate, but to attend. And then you can decide when you're ready to participate.
So good. You know, I will definitely agree in all the points there. Just last question. Where can people find out more about you online? Do you have Twitter, blog? Do you have LinkedIn?
I don't have a blog. I do have Twitter. So I'm at Sarah Booj. So that's SarahBooj. My last name is Bujea, which if anyone knows how to pronounce that from the get-go after reading it, I am always super impressed. And so my nickname has been Booj as a result. So Sarah Booj is, it doesn't offend me at all by any means. It's like a compliment almost. So you can find me on Twitter. You can find me on LinkedIn, but Twitter is probably where I'm most active and happy to have any kind of discussions where we talk shop, or often you'll find me tweeting about the Toronto Raptors.
That's what I was going to ask you. So follow-up question is, how are you finding the Raptors game this season? I mean, they're on a losing streak lately.
Yeah, this is a hot topic. So I love them. I love the Toronto Raptors, win or lose. I have been a fan since I was a child. I think part of it was also because I grew up in Toronto. And so I was fortunate to grow up here that, I worked at a kids magazine when I was in high school, which was also a real way to kickstart, I guess, my professional experience. And so, sometimes, people would offer them tickets, and everyone wanted the Leafs tickets, but no one cared for the Raptors tickets. And so on occasion, I would get offered tickets, and because no one else wanted them. And I was like, yeah, I'm game. And so I had the fortune of, once upon a time when a lot less people cared, of sitting very, very close to go to a lot of games when I was younger, and over the years, make the time to do so. So win or lose, I'm a fan for life. They've had a bit of a losing streak, and I think in life you're gonna have that sometimes, and I'm okay with it. I'm gonna, Kyle Lowry's getting towards the end of his contract, and I'm gonna be real sad when that guy leaves.
It's funny you say that, because I was looking at the prices for the game coming up this Saturday with Nets, and it starts off at $135 now that they're winners, right?
I remember when $135 got you platinum. So yeah, it hurts. It really hurts. But I get it. That's also a business, and I'm so happy for the Toronto Raptors and that whole organization in terms of what they've built over the past 25 years. I think it's remarkable. Basketball has more and more become ingrained in our city and our society. And I just think it's a very accessible sport. I played basketball in elementary school, high school, and intramural in university. I'm not that tall, so needless to say, I was a point guard. Hence my affinity for Kyle Lowry. And it's an accessible sport that a lot of people can play. And there's a lot of diversity that comes from that. And I think it's a really beautiful sport. And so I'm ride or die for the Toronto Raptors.
I mean, defensively, they've been doing really well. Like, they've shut down, LeBron. They shut down Kawhi in the first time that they played
them. They didn't shut down Kawhi in the second half yesterday, though.
Not yesterday, but the first time they played him, he only got, two or four points at that game. But, there's always that hope, There's always that prayer that they'll get to the finals would be a leap.
I think Nick Nurse has done a great job in pushing a team sport versus an individual sport, given our roster hasn't dramatically changed. And so I think that's awesome. And, the energy and the atmosphere at those games, and also what you can get off television, it's awesome. And I think there's just a bigger story than just winning or losing. It's also, in 2019, being the underdogs, which is something I so adore, that I'm surprised the NBA let the Toronto Raptors win, as controversial of a comment as that might be.
The referees were making some really sketchy calls, right?
Referee calls or not, I understand from a media perspective the ad revenues they would have lost by not having two American teams in the finals last year. And so I get that from a business perspective, and I really hope that that wouldn't influence who ends up in the finals again. But it is really nice to be behind a team that a lot of people doubted, and to rise to the occasion. And I think that transcends into real life every day.
If you get offered a marketing job with the Raptors, would you quit Wave tomorrow?
I've been asked that.
Director of the Bad Gen, Toronto Raptors.
First of all, the Toronto Raptors do not need any demand generation. I think they have plenty of demand by themselves. You know what? I'm not gonna say never say never. But also, like, all that glitters is not gold. I would hate to like ever have a job that was that close to the Toronto Raptors, and then it starts to like create a different perspective of them. I love that I love them from the distance that I'm at. And I wouldn't want to do anything that would jeopardize that.
That's a good place to wrap this up.
That to say, who knows?
Oh, man. 5 years from now, Sarah's working at Toronto Raptors.
Hello, MLSE. Who knows? Who knows?
Well, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. It's been awesome.
Well, that was it. The last episode of January 2020. And with this, I want to share with you my key takeaways from this episode. First, demand gen is beyond just bringing people at the door. I love what Sarah said. She pointed out that the role of demand gen is bringing the right people in the door and giving them the right things at the right time. So the integrated approach is really critical in demand gen. It's not just bringing more website visitors or more signups. It's actually trying to get them to become lifelong customers. Second, align what success means for everyone in the team. That's what the demand gen and growth and customers and sales team at Wave did. Once they had that, they made sure that the users were taking meaningful actions beyond just the sign up. And third, keep on learning. What we're doing in paid search 5 years ago versus what we're doing today has evolved dramatically. So make sure you stay up to date and make sure that you are flexible to new ways of doing things. And that's super important. Now, did I miss something? Share with me your key takeaways from this episode on Twitter at RamleyJohn or email ramley@growthtoday.fm. I do reply back to all my emails unless you are pitching me something like a sales product or something. If you want to just send me an email to say hi, I will definitely reply back. Before I end, I just want to thank those who made this episode possible. Now, these folks help cover the cost of hosting marketing tools so that I can continue to get amazing guests and experts that really you and I can learn from. So I just want to thank the sponsor for this episode, Referral Rock. Once again, it's a SaaS that helps businesses like yours unlock all the referrals you are missing out on. So stop waiting for word of mouth to just happen while letting those precious referral opportunities go to waste. Find out more at referralrock.com/growtoday, or you can find the link in the description to start a free trial or get a consultative demo. I also want to let you know, if you don't like ads like this, you can get an ad-free version of this podcast. You also get each podcast episode a day before everybody else, have access to me in a private Slack group, and also have video AMA calls with me. If you'd like, go to patreon.com/growtoday to sponsor this show for as little as $2 per episode. Well, that's it for this episode. Until the next one, this is your host, Ramley John. And as always, keep on growing.